Wednesday, February 21st, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Well, just as I warned, and as we have seen so many times in the past, the recent shooting has completely eclipsed all else. The faint idea of holding the FBI accountable for its many crimes is all but forgotten, even as its ineptitude is now on display for this very shooting, be that intended or not. And just like all other topics used to divide, this one is being pushed forward on both sides of the aisle to further their agendas and see them to fruition. Using the lives of these children as leverage to emotionally manipulate in hopes of getting what they want. Even while anyone doubting any aspect of the events, and with good reason when understanding our very own history, is deemed a conspiracy theorist. If you doubt any part of the recent tragedy, or think any part was faked, urged forward, or now being used in any way, despite the documentable history of the FBI doing exactly that, you are a conspiracy theorist. And as CNN has reported, apparently being enabled by Trump himself. The focus being put squarely on the issue of government control and mental illness. Nothing else is a legitimate point to be argued in the eyes of mainstream media, as Fox even cut off one of its own for daring to address the issue of psychotropic drugs and their correlation to these shootings. No, that's not one of the government authorized discussion points. They need this to be about the illness, not the cause. You see, because the illness allows them further control, whereas addressing the cause behind the illness only serves to pull back the curtain and reveal what's really going on. And they cannot have that. They cannot have us realizing that the medications are literally killing and manipulating our population, and worse yet, realizing that was also part of the plan. They need us getting emotional and reacting to what they present us with. That way, we are channeled into calling for our own oppression by way of more authoritarian government control and further loss of constitutional rights. For your own protection, of course. Never mind that it's protection from those claiming to be the protectors. Just have your medication and relax. And meanwhile, the U.S. military machine marches on around the world with just as little regard for the lives of those overseas as we fail to see that they have for ours. The sad thing is people are falling for this yet again. Especially the youth, as they march out of class to call for more of exactly what truly caused this in the first place, government. All while feeling they are part of something bigger, part of some positive change. Social engineering at its finest. The first story to discuss today coming out of mintpressnews.com, without changing a stripe, ISIS morphs from U.S.'s deadly enemy to useful weapon to perfect target. While President Trump has recently hailed the defeat of ISIS, the group has been able to stave off a complete defeat by retreating to a few small remaining pockets of Syria. One of these pockets, located east of the Euphrates along Syria's border with Iraq, is surrounded by Syrian Democratic Forces, a grouping of Kurdish militias that are trained and armed by the U.S. and who act as the U.S.-led anti-ISIS coalition's leading partner in the fight against ISIS. And while the SDF and the coalition engage in battle with ISIS further south near Abu Kamal, that is not the case in this pocket to the north. The fighters operating within this area do not have the fear coalition attacks or SDF assaults. Instead, they have been free to conduct their activities unimpeded, despite being surrounded by U.S. allies on the ground and U.S. aircraft overhead. This is because the coalition has left this ISIS contingent alone for months, as virtually no airstrikes have been carried out in the region since at least as far back as November of 2017. The few airstrikes that have been conducted since then, few enough to count on one hand, have not targeted ISIS fighters, save one. This is the curious situation on the ground, which, despite a telling lack of reporting, has been maintained for months now. After the U.S.-backed SDF had encircled one of the last remaining pockets of ISIS fighters, the U.S. at the same time announced to Syria and its allies that it would prevent the Syrian army from crossing into the U.S. self-declared zone of control, while actively blocking the Syrian army, which was fighting ISIS on multiple fronts, from reaching this swath of territory. The coalition themselves have refused to attack it for months. The picture that then emerges is one of an anti-ISIS coalition, one that has routinely expressed steadfast commitment to annihilate and bring a lasting defeat to ISIS, which has instead been effectively safeguarding one of the last ISIS strongholds still standing, as well as the ISIS fighters within it. Even according to the Financial Times, quote, some U.S.-backed opposition fighters and activists suspect their own side could be allowing small pockets of ISIS to survive so they can attack and weaken the regime and its main backer in the region, Iran. One of such fighters noting that the Iranians practically controlled Al-Bukamal. Now ISIS is taking over all over again. It seems then that the U.S.-led coalition could use exterminating ISIS as an excuse to seek control of that whole area. This ultimately comes back to the topic we've discussed many times. We know now that not only was the ISIS in general created, funded, and armed to carry out exactly what we're seeing, to essentially destabilize Syria for the efforts of trying to overthrow the Assad regime, we're seeing now that it is ultimately being protected to maintain this excuse. Ultimately, if they were to defeat them entirely, the United States would lose its already flimsy ground that it's standing on, this excuse of trying to fight ISIS. Ultimately, they've already claimed that they plan to stay there indefinitely in case it were to rise again, kind of this flimsy premise they're presenting. But right now, it's already an illegal idea. The world has acknowledged that what's going on there is illegal. The fact is, if it were to lose this one small pocket, it would ultimately give the rest of the world enough reason to call them out ultimately and tell them they have to leave. That's what it breaks down to. But what we're seeing now is this essentially encircling this last pocket and not allowing them to be attacked. I mean, how much more transparent do we need to see this? And this is not the first time we've seen this happen. We've seen many, many times in the past where the United States has claim something else, but ultimately protected either them retreating or actions being carried out by the very terrorists they claim to be fighting in the first place. It's something we need to begin to see more and more as this carries on, because clearly there is enough on the table right now for us to be very aware of the reality behind this situation. Moving on to the next story coming out of the antimedia.org, Israel is directly arming at least 7 Syrian rebel groups. Israel's mounting interest in Syria's war, and in particular in picking fights with the Assad government, Iran, and any other Shiite factions in the country, have included reports by analysts of a growing amount of Israeli arms and ammunition flowing across the border for rebels. Officially, Israel isn't a big fan of Sunni Islamist organizations. Such groups are the bulk of the rebellion on the Golan frontier, and that's made them groups Israel has a very serious interest in seeing survive and thrive on the border. Analysts say Israel is directly arming at least 7 groups in the area. To be clear, no specific factions are named in any of these reports, but past reports have put Israel on the side of some very unfashionable groups like Al-Qaeda's Nusra Front, which have been active in the area for some time. Israeli officials have been very public in the past, saying they prefer ISIS to the Alawite government in Syria. Expressing such a preference in arming terrorists are two different things, and Israel's effort to step up arming for Islamist groups risks regional blowback. Arming terrorists to achieve geopolitical goals is a strategy widely used by the U.S., and this should not surprise us in the least. But we must begin to see this for what it is, and not under the false pretense that the Israeli actions are out of self-defense or some lie about fighting the very entities that they arm, just like the U.S. A lot of these things are beginning to be much more transparent of late, but I would argue that's why we're seeing a lot of these different actions at home, to get us to look other places, because it's beginning to become very, very clear who is the provocateur here and who is simply defending themselves. There's always much more to these stories, but I think the reality is finally beginning to materialize. Moving on to the next story from ZeroHedge.com. The Petro is born today. Maduro launches oil-backed crypto for the welfare of Venezuela. More than 2 months after Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro announced his intention to launch the world's first state-sponsored cryptocurrency to try to help Venezuela raise some badly needed foreign capital, the Petro, backed by 5 million barrels of oil that are still waiting to be pumped out of the local oil field, it's now a reality. Venezuela first tipped its hand at its intentions over the summer when it appointed what seems to be the world's first, quote, superintendent of cryptocurrency. And this is something that we should always be very, very leery of. Ultimately, any kind of government control over this aspect is something that I tend to veer away from. I don't like the idea that any government regulation in regard to cryptocurrency. However, to see this happen shows you that even in government's eyes, this is something that cannot be stopped. And it makes sense that it comes out of somewhere like Venezuela that has been the brunt of just years of economic sanctions and economic warfare at the behest of the United States government, for many different reasons that take too long to get into here, but that tie back to resource control and Russia specifically. But ultimately, they're trying to manipulate that country like they have many, many others. So to see this happen is interesting. Because it also in a way gives the United States an excuse to continue to call out cryptocurrency as some kind of an illegal aspect or some way of money laundering or some illegal action for governments. I guarantee that's how this is going to be framed. But I think this is a positive step. But again, it's the idea of this whole movement is not about one thing or the other. It's about the entire idea of decentralization and blockchain technology, something that I think is important to support. But at the end of the day, we should be leery of any government being involved. But again, this is an interesting story we'll have to keep track of. Moving on to the next story out of the antimedia.org, how Donald Trump's policies have brought us to the brink of World War III. Donald Trump has famously relaxed the Obama-era restrictions on calling in airstrikes, meaning commanders on the battlefield can call in airstrikes at their disposal without any oversight. Previously, an airstrike could not be launched on a whim and was required to go through certain protocols before it could be delivered. Now, even associated forces can call in American airstrikes on the battlefield. The most infamous example of this is when Iraqi commanders called in a U.S. airstrike that ended up killing well over 200 civilians in a single bombardment. Although civilian casualties today are seemingly just disregarded as part of war, but it is a war crime. The ultimate idea is that with this kind of unilateral, just broad action without considering the civilian lives is in fact a war crime. Not something we like to consider today, as the United States government is killing ridiculous levels of civilians on the ground and just kind of brushing it off as part of the endeavor. Now, barely a week after Trump's Syria strike in April, the U.S. military dropped a $450,000 bomb in Afghanistan, dubbed the mother of all bombs. It soon transpired that the decision to drop that bomb was not made by Trump himself, but by General John Nicholson, commander of the U.S. forces in Afghanistan. It's time to ask yourself, are you comfortable with commanders on the battlefield calling in airstrikes, even if those airstrikes could potentially kill personnel on the ground belonging to another nuclear power? Last Tuesday, Wisconsin Democrat Mark Pocan told the nation that Congress has never authorized force against Syrian, Turkish, Yemeni Houthi, Russian, Iranian, or North Korean forces. Yet reportedly, a secret administration memo may claim the legal justification to do just that, attack Syrian, North Korean, and other forces without any congressional authority. According to Lawfare, a lawsuit required the government to reveal a list of documents relating to the April Syria strike, but not the actual documents themselves. The court-ordered directions forced the government to reveal that the 7-page secret memo Pocan was referring to was drafted up by administration's lawyers on April 6, 2017, just before Trump's infamous strike. The government's declarations revealed that only a few of the words on one of the memo's pages were classified, and they are related to facts, not legalities. Still, the administration refused to disclose the memo to the public, claiming that document is exempt from the Freedom of Information Act. On a side note, something I always point out, that the idea of the Freedom of Information Act in a lot of ways is just a placation. Clearly, when they don't want us to see something, there's ways of making that happen. So it's something to consider there. In early February, the Pentagon released its much-anticipated 2018 Nuclear Posture Review, something we've discussed many times. The United States now reserves the right to unleash nuclear weapons first in extreme circumstances to defend the vital interests not only of the United States, but also of its allies and partners, a total of some 30 countries. Now, the long-term repercussions of changing the face of nuclear war, effectively making it less taboo and more an open option on the table, may be the very thing that finally brings this geopolitical pot to a boil, the tipping point. This is not even considering the idea of hackers or false flags involved in this worrisome topic. Going from a time where it was a widely agreed upon consensus that nukes were a defensive measure, mutually assured destruction, their very presence was to ensure that they never had to be used, to one where smaller nukes are now part of the plan, will be our downfall. And when I say we, I mean humanity. It is topics such as this which get ignored during the ongoing hysteria around the recent shooting. And how ironic that it is precisely topics such as this and the normalization of war, murder, and violence as an honorable act, noble even, if you present yourself as having a just cause, true or not, that are at the crux of the issue here. This deeply ingrained violence brimming just beneath the surface in our society, along with the absolutely criminal and shockingly frivolous manner in which mind-altering medications are doled out to our youth, are the root cause of these horrible acts. But don't look behind the curtain. Just stay focused on the gun control and mental illness and how the government needs to step further into your life in order to control the problem it created. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.